everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Hello, everyone. Today, my guest is Carol May Wittick. Welcome, Carol. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you so much, Shannon. I'm looking forward to our conversation together.
I am looking forward for this conversation as well, because you have got an amazing journey story, and I'm so excited for the audience to hear it, because you are going to help so many people out there that are or were in the same position that you were in. And just you speaking your truth, coming out in the open, is going to help hundreds and hundreds of people. And that is the purpose of this podcast. So let's get started with this journey of yours. First off, if you can let the audience members know a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and right from there, Carol, if you can go into your story.
Sure, no problem. So where I'm at now is I'm a creativity and spiritual life coach. I also am a podcaster as well. And aside from that, I'm a writer. So I'm just completing my full book now as well. So I'm just putting the final touches on that, as well as creating courses and really just working towards helping women through many different things, creativity, but also that transition that they go through of midlife and what that means, and making that portion of your life the thriving part of your life when you actually consolidate everything that has happened in your life. And the reason that I'm so passionate about that and so driven to finish that and bring that to the world is because I can see that reflected in my own life story as well. I turned 51 just a day ago as well. So, and it seems wild to me as well, you know, that that's my age, because when I was younger, it always seemed so far off. It all seemed so ancient. It felt like, you know, there you are, you're going to be counting the days down. And nothing could be further from the way that I feel about where I am energetically, and also where I am when I think about what I want to achieve in my life. I feel like I'm just starting out, if anything.
I'm so excited for you, Carol, because I am 54. And I used to look back when I was in my 20s and 30s, think, oh my God, like that's so old. But I am at a place in my life where I am so in tune, in alignment, so happy. I've never been more happier in my entire life. I've never looked younger and more in shape in my entire life, being 54 years old. So when you say 51, oh my goodness, my 50s, I'm just so happy. My 50s are the greatest so far. So it's amazing. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you that I got here and I can see so much and just have visions for what my future is going to be and what I can create. And it's just the total opposite of what I thought this time would be for me, because I came from just a really chaotic background basically as well. So the chaos just kind of happened, really. It wasn't that I was born into a chaotic situation, it was like a series of events. So the first thing that really broke the family open was that my father passed suddenly when I was 4 years old. And that was the beginning of my mom's journey through and with mental illness. And that was the story of me and my brother with her for 44 years until she passed. And as you can imagine, when someone's going through a mental illness, some days they're super high, manic even, and then other times they're crushingly low. And as a child, when you're watching your only carer in the world have these emotional swings. You know, you don't really know where to go with that. So like, do you go up, do you go down? And what I did is I actually retreated away, because I was just a highly sensitive child that just couldn't keep getting thrown up and down with that. And also for me, you know, looking back on it and really considering what that meant to me, especially now that I'm just been going through the book, is you go over your life and you really have a bird's eye view about what happened in hindsight. You're not in your feelings about it. You really understand it. And where I moved into is I moved into writing books, creativity, music. And that's where I found my solace. And over time, I realized that that's how I understood and I had a connection with spirit very early on. So I knew that I was always being guided. There was like an idea that I had that there was always going to be some purpose to my life. Didn't know what it was going to be. Didn't know where it was going to take me. I mean, initially I thought it was creativity, solely creativity and performing and music, which I did for many years. So I always, after a while, knew that relying on this voice or this guidance was going to pull me forward. So especially when I'd be in the household where there'd be a lot of chaos and turmoil within the house, I could always go back to my books, I could go back to my mind, I could go back to this spirit that was guiding me through things. And just because I understood what that connection was, didn't mean that my life wasn't it didn't have turmoil. It just knew, I always knew where I could go back to. But I still had to go through all the things. So me and my brother were put through children's homes over the course of the years. And as a result, you know, we experienced many things that children shouldn't realize. So it meant that I didn't really have very much trust in anyone who claimed to be any kind of authority figure or any kind of carer, because the people who said they were going to care for me kind of left me hanging a lot. So then there was a lot of mistrust. Also, not having a father figure meant that I went through the usual mess ups in relationships. Within my family as well, it was mainly women. So there were no male figures really. So I didn't really understand what a decent male relationship looked like. So there was me just kind of really retreating into being really confused in the world, being really shy, but then still being really driven by this creativity, then still being really driven by this idea that I'm here to do something. And like I said, I thought it was music. But even though I kept trying for the music and I didn't get to where I felt that I should have or where my dreams were taking me, they were guiding me through my life. They were teaching me things. They were teaching me resilience. They were teaching me creativity. They were teaching me trust in my intuition and my guidance and my spirit. And that's the thing that kept me sane, wherever things kind of went off left or right, you know, that's what kept me going forward. But even through all of that as well, I just had this overwhelming sense of guilt, because I just felt that, one, I couldn't connect with my mother in the way that I wanted to and have that relationship, which, you know, is going to be pretty much impossible when you're a child of somebody whose emotions are up and down all the time. It's like, where can you be? When she kind of, you know, in the moments where she stabilized, she was caring, she provided for us, she'd like shown us creativity, music. There was always that, but she was never in a stable place. So, you know, you couldn't always rely that she would be there. And as a result of me not being able to find emotional stability in that, I moved away to the big city, to the capital, to seek my fortune in music. But what that then created, it created a rift between me and my brother, an emotional rift. Also, what I didn't realize is he'd kind of seen me for quite some time as a mother figure, but I was a child. I was only and am only 3 years older than him. So when I did go back to the family home, there was always this kind of, there was always tension. There was always something going there. And I allowed things to go on that I just thought that I, you know, okay, he's having a go at me, he's angry at me, you know, well, I'm not here all the time, so maybe he's allowed to have that anger, to have that hurt towards me. And then, you know, fast forward many years, once our mother had passed and it was just me and him, and I had this kind of Pollyanna idea that, you know, we'd see each other and when we kind of be able to talk through where we'd been in life and then move forward, I realized that the relationship that my brother and I had wasn't healthy at all. And that my brother, because, you know, he was born into a very unstable situation. So he was only ever going to be a product of not having any real parental guidance, but that had within him a rage. And that rage would always be directed at me or anyone else. And many, many people have and still do make excuses for him and protect him, really. But when I really realized that what the nature of our relationship was, and when I, you know, saw like the last few times that I was around him, how he would change towards me and just almost like a rage come over his face, where I'd be looking at him and just going, this guy doesn't really like me, you know. And even when, you know, he'd be saying, well, you know, I love you, but I don't like you, it was like, you know, sometimes when someone tells you something, you just have to believe them. And it was at that point in time where the penny really dropped to me that it was, this is abuse. You know, and for the first time ever in my life, I was looking at it going, hang on a minute, this isn't just natural rage. This has been going on for a long time. There have been subtle clues to this before, but you've allowed it because you've felt so guilty that you felt deserve to be treated so badly. But now the reason for his rage, our mom has passed, and now it's you and him. Are you know, these were the conversations I was having with myself, like, am I going to stay connected to him and allow him to abuse me in this way emotionally and psychologically, and then continue my life like that? And I had to make the decision that if I wanted to go forward with anything, really, if I really wanted to have the life that I wanted to, it wasn't going to be possible to have it happen being connected to him in any kind of way. And so I had to make the decision to separate in my mind and just go, you know, maybe not in this lifetime. If we can't get to a point of really being able to speak and really being able to heal what's happened between us and heal how we see each other, then it's not going to be able to happen. And I made the decision about 4 years ago to just separate and just go, this is probably it for my lifetime. And then I just went through a massive, massive grieving that I can see now, that I felt so separated from that connection that I had about spirit and everything like that. That wasn't there for a good few months. I just felt like all I could do was wake up and I got to make sure I just get through the day. I like had virtually no money. I was pretty much homeless. I was like moving around at friends' places. Sometimes I was even staying at hostels for like a couple of days and moving on. And I had like lower than any dark night of the soul, because I've experienced dark night of the soul situations before. This was something else. This was like, I don't know, like an existential separation or something like that, that for a good few months, I was just a shell of a person just trying to make it through to, I don't even know where, you know. And like I said, I didn't have really a home. Like I was working bits, but I wasn't building up any money to actually make a decision and say, okay, I'm going to live here. And what started that was when I just really felt the impact of everything that had happened up until that moment in my life. So all of the 40 odd years of following spirit and kind of checking out of what was happening in my life, because by kind of going into this dream world and following the dream, it kept me emotionally safe. But there came a point where I couldn't bypass it anymore and I had to feel it. And it was at that point when I realized the reality of my situation, that I was okay, this is when I feel everything, this is when everything falls apart. And that was like the low point for me, and that's where I had to start to build up from.
I think a lot of people can actually resonate with your story, because I look at myself, my situation, my life, and when you had said that you know, with your brother, you're a product of your environment. That was the same thing with me. I grew up in an environment of hostility, you know, alcoholism, addiction, stuff like that. So that was very normal to me. So just looking at other people, I had that hostility ingrained with me too. And it's really sad to say, you know, because when I looked at people, or when people, you know, got to know me, and I would be introduced to people for the first time, because I was a product of that hostile environment, I would always see the bad in people first. And that's really sad. You know, and then if I started to see the good in the people, which I eventually would, I would eventually push them away, because I wasn't used to having being treated nice or whatever, because I didn't feel that I was worthy, or I had shame or whatever it was. And of course, there was a lack of trust as well, too, right? So I was like always on the defensive, okay, why are you being nice to me? And just accepting it genuinely, you know? And yeah, like it's, and that's a real eye opener for so many people, because so many people live in that environment and they don't realize that you're not allowing all these beautiful things in because of our past, because of what, yeah, your story will resonate with hundreds of people out there. Now going into, you know, you've been there, you've gone through the whole process. And what would you say is the biggest learning experience from that journey?
Sometimes we want to overlook and make excuses for people. Mm-hmm. And what happened over those few months when I left, and I was, you know, just bouncing around, really trying to figure out what was going on, I had so many bouts of flashbacks. And they weren't just flashbacks of what had happened, like the previous like weeks, just the recent weeks. There were flashbacks of moments all over the years, decades before, where there had been instances where something had happened and I'd kind of overlooked it. And so it was just showing me that this was not new. This was like a lifetime's work of, you know, it's hard to say abuse, but it was yeah, psychological, and it was mental abuse. And you know, and even now when I say it, you know, I find it difficult. There's part of me that still wants to protect, you know, the name of people, but then also I have to not gaslight myself about the story and the reality of what I experienced, because what I realized is my confidence really only solidified properly when I came away. And then, but it it didn't even happen overnight. You know, it was like a months of like, what's going on? Waking up in the middle of the night and having a flashback of something that had happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, because somehow, you know, by cocooning myself with this spirit and this dream and this guidance, I'd managed to kind of keep myself emotionally relatively safe. Even though it was difficult for me to always go and visit my brother and my mom, because I'd go back home, you know, like I said, I lived in a different city, and it would take me a few weeks to get regulated, because just going and visiting and being in the energy of all the chaos threw me completely off. Yeah. So I would be gone, and I'd be gone for months, and they'd be like, why aren't you here? And, you know, every other part of the person in the family would be like, you should be visiting. You do. And I couldn't explain to them that it would throw me off completely. Like, it would take me weeks to just really kind of like realign so that I was relatively functioning. And the thing is, what I was good at, and I kind of developed this thing very early on from school, is I'd be able to present really well. So, you know, no one would really know what was going on, because, you know, Carol's smiling and all the rest of it and presenting, because back in those days, you didn't speak about mental illness, not the way that people do now. You know, it's like, you don't talk about these things. So this was all going on behind closed doors. And yet I'd go to school and I was like the best athlete. I was the best musician. I was tall. I was popular. I was funny. But at home, there was not that, you know. So I developed a way of kind of presenting a persona of coping, when at the core of me, that was not fully the case, because when I went home, the safest place for me was to just go and hide in my bedroom and just write songs and read books, you know, and just connect with my own creativity and spirit. That's how I got through. But you can't live your life locked away in rooms. You know, there comes a point where you have to kind of crash down and look at what was happening. So, it was realizing that this was a long-term thing. That was, I think that was a big, big shock for me as well. And then I had to deal with the whole, this has been happening for your entire life. This has been happening in your home for your entire life. And no one else saw it. Why didn't anyone else see it? Well, one, because I was like a quiet kid, you know, I was the quieter one. So I wasn't the one that had the voice and the attention of the family. And also because I wasn't there and I wasn't doing the right thing. So that, you know, I had a lot of judgment. I felt that the family were judging me because I wasn't doing the right thing. I wasn't there. I wasn't looking after my parent. I was off chasing some dream. And it wasn't just about chasing some dream, though. It was also about just staying emotionally safe. And, you know, to this day, it's been something that I've not been able to communicate because I know that there's still that judgment there. And there's, for me, there's that lack of security. Even because I know that I can't even bring my story to them, because anyone who's been in any kind of abusive situation abusers are charming in public, you know, like, so no one's ever going to believe what it is that you're saying about them, because their comeback to that, and this is what I heard, was like, well, it's all right with me. So when you're trying to tell somebody your story that this is what's happening to me, and they're like, yeah, but he's fine with me. It just is almost like someone negates everything that you're going through. And it's like a second knife in the wound. If anything, it goes deeper, because then you're like, well, who do I turn to? You know, and he even managed to speak to a friend of mine that we'd been friends for 20 odd years, who was then trying to convince me to go back. This is when I'd like made the decision to leave. And he contacted someone he'd not been in contact with for 15 odd years or so, who then was trying to say, well, it's your family, you've got to go back. And I was like, I can't explain to you why I can't go back. And it's like, yeah, but you're going to regret it. You know, it's your family. What are you going to do when things go bad or when you need someone? I'm like, I have to, this is not an easy decision to make, but I know that if I stay there, then my life literally will be finished because I'm on the floor right now and I can't really get any lower. And to go back into a situation where I'm not being seen, and the only way that I can be in that situation is to play small because, you know, everyone's kind of clawing at you. I can't do that. So when I was trying to be heard by someone that I thought I'd known for like decades, And I remember saying to them, I'm like, listen, I don't want to fall out with you about this. And they were like, well, we're not going to fall out. But in my head, I'm like, if you can't hear me at my lowest when I'm trying to communicate with you that something terrible has happened to me and you don't want to hear it, there is no friendship, because this is when I need you the most. I don't need you to do anything. I just need you to listen. Mm-hmm. And if you can't just hear my story or wonder why someone who's not spoken to you for like 10, 15 years, suddenly out of the blue, contacts you and tells you this story and you don't want to hear what I have to say, then, you know, so it literally pulled everything away from me. And it's always like, they always say, it's like when you're at your lowest, you find out who your people are.
100%.
And, you know, and I know who my people are, you know, at the core. It still took a couple of years where some stragglers that still needed to move off, you know, I'd say like this year has definitely been like just cleaning out the last stragglers, because there were just a few that were hanging on to me and that I was still allowing people to kind of treat me badly, because there was still that people pleasing element.
Yeah.
In me, you know, that continued. And then there came a point where, and I knew, you know, there's part of me going, this person's playing you. And I'm just like, really, do I have to go through this again? Do I have to do another clean of house? And but, you know, this with this occasion, the trash took itself out, you know. So yeah. I kind of saw it coming, and so I prepared myself for it to come, so it didn't hurt so much, because, you know, it was just me going, well, you know, I knew this a while back anyway, and I just had to allow.
And that's the thing. Yeah. I was going to say, you already intuitively knew that it was coming,
It doesn't make it any more easier because you still have to go through the feelings of the emotions and everything, but it's not so much of a blow.
No.
And the reason I can say that, I when as you're talking about all of this, I'm like, yep, because I've experienced it all. I literally have experienced everything that you're saying. And by the time my journey, her journey is never done, but I was at a point where I only had my husband, my four children, and two friends left. Both sides of the family, I had to release, praise and release, and let them go. And that's another thing that people need to realize is when you go through the process of forgiveness, and you know this, Carol, the forgiveness is for your well-being. It's for you. It's not for anybody else. So when you forgive somebody, that does not mean that you need to bring them back in your life.
Yeah.
People need to understand that. You do not need, because you forgive, you know, your mother-in-law or your sister-in-law or your sister, that you need to bring them back in your life and you need to have a relationship. No, it's so you have peace within you. So you've changed, but that sure as heck doesn't mean that they've changed.
No, right? And I know that's not the case because, you know, they've reached out to me, but when you know someone and you know someone's language, you know, you like you can like read an email or you can see something and you just see, you know, it starts off nice and then it goes a certain way. So you're like, nothing has changed here. And also knowing that should I reach out, that, you know, like, or things were sent to get a reaction out of me. And I'm like, this is not the way that somebody who wants honest communication reaches out to you. This is, you know, there was something that was sent to me that I won't even go into it, but it was going to trigger me, and it did. But I'm glad that I just didn't pick the phone up and go, oh, you know. And I could, there would have been no right way. Either I could have contacted them and been angry about it, which is like perfect because that's their frequency is anger. Or I could have gone and been like sad and like, why are you doing this? And it would have been poke, poke, poke until I would have risen up to anger. You know, there is no way. Yeah. And I had to really think about what is it that I want for myself? Mm-hmm. What is it that I want for myself? Because even during those times as well, I'd already started the podcast. I'd already been working on things as well. So even when everything was pulled away from me, and I barely had any money and I hadn't secured anywhere solid to live, I had the podcast and I had my laptop. So I kept putting out episodes. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to like keep building from this. And one of the things that gave me real confirmation is the day that I left and the day that I came back to London, a friend of mine had said, oh, I'm going to be away for a month. Like, can you come and like sit in my flat for a bit? So, you know, it all kind of like, it made itself beautifully, just kind of got me out of that situation and got me back to London, which was, you know, it's a hard place to be when you haven't got much money, but it was just away. And that's what needed to happen. But I remember sitting on a tube on the way to my friend's house, and I sat next to a woman. And we just ended up speaking, and like initially we kind of connected because there was a little baby sitting across from us and we were both kind of like mugging at the baby and everything like that and laughing and joking. And then when the baby got off, then we kind of looked at each other and we started having this conversation. And I don't even know how we ended up there, but she ended up being the next guest on my podcast and I was just like, yeah, like I might have zero, but I've got the idea that, you know, through all of this maelstrom of chaos and emotional abuse and everything and pain and suffering and grief that I've been through, I've still always managed to create. And I can always like pick up the crumbs of the things that I've created to keep me going. I might not have much money, but, you know, I've got a functioning laptop and I'll find a Wi-Fi signal and I'll start and I'll keep putting out episodes. And that's what kind of kept me going. It's been like the rope that I've held onto has been my creativity, like I said, from an early age. But I still had to kind of deal with the real world situations that in order for me to really push it to the fore, I had to get away from the people that were mocking what I was doing and couldn't see the value in what I was doing, because there were like two sides to what I was doing. When I spoke to women about my podcast and I got the right guests on. The conversations, the depths of conversation and the sharing that they were having, we understood each other, you know, and we'd maybe had like a quick chat before, and then we got on and just had those rich conversations. And then on the other side, I had people mocking it, thinking it was stupid. And like, where am I going to go? Like, I can go where you go, where you're appreciated, you go where you're seen. And sometimes you're appreciated by complete strangers on the physical, but yet your soul's a family. And that's where I went. I found the soul in the women and men that I spoke to on the podcast, who understood what it was that I was trying to create, and connected with me because I was speaking to them from that point. And so I had to look at what I had. And also what helped me during that time was there was one song that I used to play over and over again, a gospel song. And the first time that I played it, I just cried. And I played it on and on and on and on and on, you know, and just allowed myself to cry and cry and cry, probably more than I cried in a lifetime over weeks. And this one song, if you go on YouTube, it's got like maybe like 50 million views by now, because it's just, it hits so much with everybody. And what really, another thing that really kind of started to change for me was I just surrendered to the situation. I was like, okay, this is where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It's like, this is where I am. Instead of fighting it, instead of being annoyed, instead of like fighting the flashbacks, it's like, just see where you are right now. And nothing changed overnight physically. You know, I didn't magically turn up somewhere else, because it was the beginning of 2020 and we know where we went there.
Yeah.
But it was like a situation where I looked at it and went, you know, one day I'm going to tell this story, and days down the line, I'll be able to find funny parts of it as well, which I can do, because during that, many hilarious things have happened.
So just talking what you're touching on now, that was going to be my next question, is what advice would you give others that are going through the same process right now, or have reached where they've had to praise and release and let people go and really look at their life, just like you have? What advice would you give them?
The beginning of it, allow yourself to feel. Don't lie to yourself about how hurt you are and what happened, because sometimes we want to brush it off and go, well, you know, and make excuses for people. Understand, and that doesn't mean that you don't forgive them, because you understand how they got created, how their personality and their outlook got created. But it's also about allow yourself to admit how hard it hurt you. And that doesn't mean that you're going to stay there forever, but just go like, this is crap, man. This is like, this hurts. And really accept that that's how much it hurt you. And then surrender and be like, this is where I am now, but I'm not going to be here forever. How can I now start to observe my situation, knowing that I'm moving out of it now? And, you know, in years to come, I will tell this story. In years to come, I might write about it. You know, how can I make this the point where I actually start to crawl up and out into the new side of myself? So it's just allowing yourself to be honest about what's happening. Don't make excuses for people's bad behavior, and then surrender to it and just be like, okay, this is where I am. I'm sitting right at the bottom of the pit right now.
Yeah.
And then look up from there.
And I agree with you on that. And what I want my audience members to know too, is when you give that time yourself to really feel, make it all about you. There's no time frame at all. And you just really need to give yourself that time and that space to really go through the emotions and really, really look at life. That is what's going to really make you grow. Just kind of going through that whole process of the feeling, because how many of us have suppressed those feelings for so long? And it really is a shock to your system once you come to the realization of how hard, you know, your past has been, all the things that you've gone through, not letting yourself allow yourself to have those feelings. And it's a real eye opener, and it's a game changer. Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Let it hurt, you know.
Let it
be painful. Cry it out and feel it in every part of your body, because what I realized at that point is I had managed to spend years not feeling anything. And then when I felt it all at once. And over the course of, I'd say, like 4 or 5 months, it was just, it was pulling me left, right and center. You know, I didn't know what was happening from one day to the next. I couldn't really plan. I was moving around so much that it was, I was living in like 24-hour spurts, 48-hour spurts. So I couldn't allow, I couldn't be settled because I'd always have to think about where am I going to be next? Where am I going to be next? You know, just this kind of thing. It was just moving around and just slowly trying to keep myself going, knowing that at some point I can't, you know, I can't go around like this all the time. And also during that time, there was a moment when I really felt that I understood what the depths of my mother's depression was, because I don't think I ever really understood it from her point of view. Mm-hmm. And this, I was just like, man, this is low. Like, yes. It was like, oh God, this is like low, low, low.
See, yeah. And that was the thing for me when I started to forgive myself as I started to see all these different situations happening and everything. And the biggest thing, when I started to forgive myself for all the things, because you have to take responsibility and ownership for your life. Once mm-hmm. I had that forgiveness, that's where I could start to see the compassion, which you would went through, where you could start to see your mother, you know, mm-hmm. for how her feelings and emotions, that was no different than me. I could actually see my mother for the first time with compassion because I could see what she had went through. And then I could love her for her. That's no different with my brother. I could see that all that he went through. And it was like, oh my goodness, I get it. I get it. Yeah. But like I said, that did not mean that I wanted them back in my life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right?
And And you know, I appreciate the pain that he has gone through and the efforts that he made. But also I'm realistic about the way that I was treated by him emotionally and psychologically, you know, and like it's always a tricky one to say, especially with siblings, because people don't necessarily talk that much about narcissistic abuse within siblings, but it happens.
Oh yes,
and it's probably more common than people will know, and it's, you know, especially when it's your family. And then it's your sibling, because like the thing about siblings is that is the only other person, your sibling or siblings are the only other people who really know your story from the inside out, you know, like your parents, but they're in a different generation. So your siblings, you grow up together, but then sometimes you grow apart depending on how you then view the world. So it was understanding, you know, why he became the man that he did based on the experiences that he experienced, and understanding that there is a soul that's really hurt, really disappointed, and probably highly disappointed in me as well. But that doesn't warrant the, you know, I'm not to make excuses, it's just like an understanding and seeing it from that point of view. But because I have to at the core stand strong in myself for all the things that I want to do and go forward in this life, and break the patterns of generational mistakes and trauma and misunderstanding, I can't do it while I'm bypassing myself and allowing myself to be put down on every level. I need to stand strong and I need to stand away.
But you know what is sad within all of this, because I feel it just like you, is the fact that, okay, so now you're started a new life. You're attracting all these wonderful, beautiful things. You see, you've got clarity. You've seen your contrast. Your contrast was your back, was your past. But now just looking at your brother, you know, he's still living in that contrast. He's still attracting all these negative things in his life. That's how very much like I see with my family members and that, right? They're still stuck in that contrast. Mm-hmm. And it's really heartbreaking, because you wish that they would, I guess, come into the light as well, where you are the realizations of everything that has happened. And I think that's the biggest thing, which can be so heartbreaking, especially for me, because I do love my family. I do. But mm-hmm. I could only be there for so much and put up with so much. And then it had to be about me, just like with you. It had to become about you. Because now we're bringing children into this environment and we're bringing grandchildren and so on and so forth. I can't continue having that, what they call normal, which is not normal for me and for my children. And I think that's the biggest learning lesson as well too, right? You know, and I can see where you would feel that as well.
Yeah, it was that realization of just knowing that I need to walk away and never turn back, perhaps.
Yeah.
For any reason, unless I get a sense that some healing or some understanding has come from it. But in order for that healing to happen, the players within that unit need to separate themselves, and they're so enmeshed with each other that they won't, because it takes you have to be like bull strong. You really do, because you're going to get hurt. You know, you can, as you're going through it and as you're doing your healing, you like, you build up a level of resilience, but there's like so much pain that you go through. And sometimes literal pain in your heart. You literally feel your heart burning a hole in your chest when you're thinking about it. And as you find moments of clarity, then there are moments of deep, deep solitude where you're just like, man, is it really just me in the world? Because I don't have a partner at the moment, so it really is just me, and I never had children. And that was a conscious decision because, you know, one, I was kind of wanting this career, but also I wanted to make sure that the person that I was with, I could build a family with, because I'd seen how hard it was to be a single parent. I didn't want that for myself, and I didn't want any children to be born to me and immediately feel responsible for me, because I didn't think that was fair on a child. So I've got to this age now thinking I was going to be a parent, not having given birth to any children, reconciling with that. You know, there's an area where I'm like, it would have been so nice to be a mother, because I'm so super patient now as a result of everything. But also, I didn't want to just make the mistake and have a child because I wanted to have a child. There needed to be like a real conscious decision around it, because also I know my background and I know the areas that I'm still healing when it comes to what relationships look like and how I feel when I'm in close proximity to someone over a long period of time. You know, I'm still working that bit out for myself. So because I didn't grow up around male-female relationships, I never saw it. Nobody had a partner. All the women in my family, either their partners, like my dad had passed, or there were just no men around. No, like all of my aunts were single parents. And I just knew that I didn't want that. That wasn't the plan that I wanted. I wanted a family unit. If I was going to have a family, I would create the family unit, and with the intention that it was going to go somewhere, as opposed to, oh, we're just going to, you know, have a child. I didn't want to do it like that ever. And I've got to this stage now where I'm moving into, you know, the new passage of my life, not having had any natural children, but then going, okay, I'm not going to regret the lack of having a physical child. I know why I didn't bring a child into this world any time before this, because my situation was chaotic. That's not fair, you know, to bring a child into that. Why would I put myself through that stress and then give a child such an uneven start that, you know, they would then continue and have like a traumatic life trying to heal from the childhood that I would have brought them into by being a chaotic person. So, you know, I know that I did it with the best of intentions, but I still have that that maternal feeling, that creation feeling. And I see now, if I channel that energy and that desire into all of the things that I'm doing, now that I can strongly align and realign with my creativity and my spirituality and see the vision that has been given to me to bring forward into the world, you know, and help other women and just tell my story and tell them that I understand. I've been through enough things and come through the other side by the grace of spirit, by the grace of my intuition, by following that path and having faith that one day it would all make sense. You know, even when it didn't make sense for like 20-30 years, I'm like, you know, one day it's going to make sense. And so there was that stubborn part of me that's just going, well, just keep yourself together, keep keep fit, keep healthy as best you can. One day it will make sense. And I think what was the celebration for me when I turned 50 was I made it. Like, it was almost like 50 was like the kind of like the halfway mark, literally, where I'm like, okay, I got over the line, and then I could really assess what had happened over my life. I'm like, oh, it all makes sense now, all the things that I'd been through. And it was like, well, what am I going to turn this into in this first year? And I've just turned 51 now. This first year in my 50s has just been getting it clear, mapping it out, making me see what this is going to be and what it's going to look like in the future, and what message I can give to others. So it's perfect. You know, it makes sense despite all of the pain.
That's what I love about the flow of this conversation, because I was going to get into the question of where are you now? Mm-hmm. Where are you now? Like, you know, and whatever you're going to say here is going to be in the podcast notes. So yeah. Share with us.
So where I am now, 10 years ago, I was on the set of the video shoot. So I'd been writing songs, and I put this project all together to shoot a video for this song called Attraction that I'd written. And the song in itself was a beautiful song because it just dropped in immediately. I woke up one morning, wrote it start to finish. And that rarely happens. You know, songs, you have to labor them. But this started start to finish. And when I was shooting the video for it, I wasn't necessarily in the best of places. You know, I was still, you know, battling with so much, but I'd managed to create this project. I had like a film director, I had extras, I had this, you know, like this whole thing. And that was 10 years ago. And I've been looking over the video and all the behind the scenes stuff recently, just going, you know what, that's like some major undertaking to do all of that. But I just really didn't realize how much I was doing, because I was just plowing forward and just, I need this, I need this, I need this. But when I watched the first edit of that video, and even though I didn't feel 100% confident, but I'm like, the cameras are on me, I've just got to give it my all. I've got to just perform like I've been doing this all the time, like I'm not scared out of my mind. I've just got to give it everything. You know, I had this red dress that I'd found off someone on Instagram, you know, I'd gone around their house and it fit me. Like, it's so random, because I'm really tall and clothes don't just fit me, you know, but everything just really lined up. And when I look back on the pictures, I could see this like woman in this red dress, and she was like tall and she was curvy, and it was me. And it was, I looked at it and I'm like, who is that? Her, like H-E-R. And that's, and from that, because I like words and acronyms and all this kind of thing, that's where higher energetic resonance came from that video. And higher energetic resonance is ultimately my brand. It's the name of my podcast, Higher Energetic Resonance Conversation and Inspirations, my coaching. It's part of my book as well, as creating higher energetic resonance, which is telling the story of my life, which has gone through all of those things to create this. And this is where I am now. I'm looking at how life has, even though I've been through all of these things, gave me a brand. You know, people sit around brainstorming with branding agencies, trying to work out what the right name is for their thing and getting it all right. This just came to me by me seeing myself. Yeah. And it was just like, this is why this all makes sense. It was like effortless moving forward. I didn't realize what I was creating at the time. And now, putting like all my story together, looking at what I've created, looking what it can be, because it's not only just, oh, it's going to be a book and the coaching and the podcast. I can see so much more of all the other things that are going to come.
I'm getting chills, because that's how you are divinely guided, even though you didn't realize it at that time. And that's how I look at my life. I can look back at it now and I'm like, oh.
Wow.
I embrace it. It's like, and I'm just smiling, and I'm smiling for you, right? Mm-hmm. Because that, for us to be aware of that, it's such a gift. That awareness is such a gift. Yeah. You know what? This has been an absolutely wonderful interview, and we're coming to a close of it now. But Carol, is there any final words that you would like to share with the audience?
if you allow it, if you sink into spirit, it does work out. It makes sense. It does work out. The purpose of your life, and I think we always like look outside of ourselves, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? Like it's out there. Your purpose is just to keep doing what you're doing, keep healing, keep forgiving yourself, seeing yourself, sometimes kind of pull out and observe where you're at and what you're doing and your behaviors and what you're putting up with as well. And sometimes just look around you and just see if, you know, you like what you see. Do you like the people that you're hanging out with? Do you like the conversations that you're having? Do you like the way you feel in your body? Just check in with yourself, because that will give you a mirror as to whether you're moving forward or backward or up or down. And just be glad that you're here and you can see it, and you can see it for what it is, because as long as you appreciate everything that happens, and even when times are hard and you're in the middle of it, allow yourself to feel the pain, but also just every now and again just ask, like, what am I supposed to be seeing here? You know, like, instead, you know, we want to fall into the victim and it's the why me, and sometimes it is why you. But then the why is like, why me? What is it showing me? What is this thing showing me? How is this going to feed me going forward? Because then it will give you a different perspective of why it's happening and what you can learn from it, and how it's going to shape you and how it's going to grow. The purpose of your life is just to recognize that you are on purpose as you keep going, and just keep checking in with your heart and making sure that what you're doing feels you with excitement. And if you've got a vision for yourself of something that you can be, embody that at this moment. Don't chase your dreams. You're being shown something, because as you follow that, as you step into the energy of that, you will be transformed in a way that you won't even be able to recognize yourself. And then, you know, I love more now than anything, because I'm just like, I can't believe where I'm at as a result of, you know, it shouldn't have gone this way, but it did. And all I can do is just answer the call, you know, and I'm just grateful that whatever was guiding me has allowed me to stick by it, and grateful to myself for just staying focused and having faith that that I'm here for a purpose, and we're all here for a purpose. Your purpose is you, and you know what it is. Everyone knows what it is, really. I can't tell you, you know what it is.
Yeah. And you know what? I love what you just said. You don't chase your dreams. They're already there. You just need to step into them. That's huge. And a lot of people don't realize that. So thank you for reminding all of us. I want to thank you so much for being on my podcast. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being a part of my journey. So thank you, Carol.
Anytime, Shannon, you know that.
I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.